ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ideally, going to work should be a positive and productive experience. And as an employee and a member of a team, you should feel supported in ways that help you do your best, not just physically, but mentally as well. Here in Australia, employers have a duty to manage psychosocial risks that get in the way of that. So how's it going? And could getting it right be part of solving the productivity puzzle? Hello, and welcome to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, helping to make your work life better. Now, there's some confusion about the terms psychological safety and psychosocial safety when it comes to our workplaces. And quite a few of you have got in touch already ahead of this story to make sure that we know that there's a difference. Don't worry, we're going to clear this up, as well as explore how psychosocial safety is being handled here in Australia and what else can help. Amy Edmondson is a professor of leadership and management at the Harvard Business School, and her research examines psychological safety and teaming within and between organisations. Rachel Potter is a research lead specialising in psychosocial factors and workplace safety at the University of South Australia. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Rachel, the Productivity Roundtable was on in our nation's capital this week, and mental health organisation Beyond Blue's pitch was for more investment in designing mentally healthy workplaces, especially for small and medium-sized businesses. Why is having mentally healthy workplaces important?
Well, there's so much research now and evidence that shows that having good work conditions really can lead to a reduction in cost for businesses and society. So the Lancet Global Health actually estimated that poor health at work costs $2.5 trillion a year. And this is really expected to rise to $6 trillion by 2030. So we need to take action, and the workplace is the perfect place to change and improve to reduce productivity costs.
Amy, we went looking for a definition of psychological safety online, and we found one attributed to you from 1999. What would you say your current definition is?
The definition hasn't changed, but I've had to work harder to make sure people understand what psychological safety is. So psychological safety describes an environment where people believe that they can speak up with work-relevant content of any kind, with provocative ideas, with mistakes, with concerns. They can challenge the boss. In other words, they can be straightforward and honest about what's really going on. Now, psychological safety really describes an emergent property of a group. It's not an individual difference. It's not like introversion or extroversion. It's a climate that we have experienced together.
And Rachel, let's go to your area of specialisation then. So that's psychosocial safety in the workplace. Can you tell us what that is?
So psychosocial safety is about assessing and eliminating the risks to someone's health. It's how work is designed, organised and managed that can cause harm. So it's really about the structural elements of work, targeting in on how work is designed to ensure someone isn't harmed at work. And from that, then we can ensure that health is promoted, I guess, with that scaffolding in place.
And how would you say it relates to psychological safety in the workplace? And then, Amy, I'll get your thoughts.
So I think that we really need to have those risks mitigated first to ensure that there's no harm. That's the base. From that, I believe that then comes that psychological safety component. The two work together, really. So you can have someone feeling safe to speak up at work and sharing ideas, but if your work schedule or your workload is too intense, it's not going to kind of come to its fruition in the best way it can. We need to have those elements of harm controlled and ensure that the workplace is, you know, safe and healthy. That's where we're going to ensure things like productivity and engagement and psychological safety can really, really occur the best they can.
Amy, apparently one of the dangers is we're really conflating these two concepts. So in your work, what would you say their relationship is and how would we distinguish them?
No, Rachel, spot on. There are things you can control. You can't control psychological safety, but you can control work hours. You can control toxic managerial behavior. You can put in place, as Rachel said, the conditions that are conducive to a positive work experience. And I'm thrilled that Australia is taking seriously that responsibility, that employers have that responsibility. If they get this right, which there's no reason why they shouldn't, then one of the results will be psychological safety. One of the results will be probably the simplest way to think about psychological safety and a simpler way to distinguish these two concepts is let's call it a learning environment. Psychological safety describes an environment where you can take the interpersonal risks of learning. You can ask for help when you don't know what to do. You can offer a dissenting point of view so that the team can learn and you know, come to a better solution. So put in place some of the conditions for a positive work experience that are controllable, that really are, you know, the responsibility of employers, and that will contribute very much to the kind of learning environment that is psychologically safe, where people can really bring their voices forward.
I think one of the dangers right at this moment is that we are spending so much time trying to distinguish between these concepts that maybe we're not even getting on with doing anything differently. So just in terms of if people were going to take steps, am I hearing that maybe the first step is to identify these psychosocial hazards, because these can be things that you can actually structurally change in the workplace, and then look at the symptoms. So then you test for, so is the outcome a psychologically safe environment? Amy, do you want to go first?
I think that's absolutely right. And Rachel alluded to this, but there is plenty of research at this point, both showing the antecedents or some of the conditions that you need to put in place to create the kind of environment we're talking about. And this is an environment where people feel able to learn. They're not holding back. They feel they are contributing. It's a sort of a positive environment for growth and development and connection and teamwork. And there's plenty of research that that environment will contribute to better performance outcomes for quality improvement, for innovation, right? For all of the things that we care about. So we should no longer be debating, you know, should we do this? The question now is, let's do it. How to do it? How do we motivate leaders at all levels in organizations to take seriously their leadership responsibility to create the environment where ultimately performance is enhanced?
Rachel, anything to add at this point?
Yeah, just I think with the confusion of terms, it is a big issue. And I think it's not just an Australian issue. Of course, it's a global one as well. But it's shifting the focus away from the source of the issue to more of an individualised issue of mental health. And so whilst that's extremely important, I think we need to look at what the legal requirements are, or identify hazards, assess risk, control them as far as we reasonably can. So it's not perfect. We just do what we can to ensure we mitigate harm to people. It's such a serious global issue, costing, like you said, you raised productivity before, but also health, mental health comes from it, but it's also physical health and family relationship challenges. So it's something that we need to look at the source of the problem rather than just at the outcome of what these kind of mental health implications are, but looking more towards how can we manage this at the workplace level. And that's very much echoed in our legislation now, which is a really positive step forward.
You're listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. I'm Lisa Leong. We're learning about psychological safety and psychosocial hazards at work with Professor Amy Edmondson from the Harvard Business School and Rachel Potter, research lead from the University of South Australia. We're going to deep dive into each of these terms right now, each of these concepts. So we'll start with psychological safety, and then we'll move to you, Rachel, on psychosocial safety in just a minute. So, Amy, how do you build psychological safety in teams?
I'm glad you said teams, because psychological safety really is something that exists in teams. It is not ever the case that you can say that you can answer the question, what's the psychological safety at some very large organization? It describes the property of a group. It describes any organization I've ever studied or worked in. Across groups, there are different climates. You've been there. We've all experienced that. So that means that whatever is happening locally, it might be the team leader behavior. It's more often than not the team leader or manager behavior that gives rise to that sense that we can be ourselves here. We can speak up. We can lean in to do good work because we're not spending 50% of our attention trying to make sure we look good or don't get in trouble. What do? We start with developing the leadership skills of team leaders, project managers, branch managers, you know, all of these wonderful leaders in the middle who so shape the working environment, you know, for their team members and make sure they have the skills they need to ask good questions, to listen intently, to assume good intentions, right? The kinds of interpersonal skills that sometimes we refer to as EQ, but they're both affective or emotional and intellectual or cognitive. Give them the skills. And then also, everyone in the workplace co-creates this kind of environment by being genuinely curious, humble, supportive, kind, if you will. I mean, I think kindness is something we don't talk about enough. That doesn't mean being nice. Being nice often means don't say what you really think. It means caring enough about a colleague to help them out when they need it, to give feedback that could help them get better, and to listen when you get it.
And can you give us an example of what happens within teams when workers don't feel psychologically safe?
There are two big risks. And one is the risk of people not pointing out a concern or a problem or a mistake that then later leads to a much larger failure, you know, a catastrophic safety failure, a workplace safety failure, a failure in the environment. And the other is the risks that, you know, don't speak up and you make a bad decision, you launch a bad product. And so all of those sort of performance-related issues that happen when people hold back their ideas, concerns, questions versus share them. So that's one bucket. And then the other bucket is the more positive side of you're enabling innovation because people can share their wild ideas and others can build on those wild ideas and challenge them and test them until they finally come up with something really new and useful. So there's a loss of innovation on one side without psychological safety, and then there's genuine risk of significant failures on the other.
And Amy, if I'm listening in, I'm a leader of a team, and I really want to start building psychological safety. Can you give me a practical lever that I can commence with?
Start by calling attention to the nature of the project or the nature of the work. You know, how much uncertainty do you think it has? How much novelty? Because if you start saying things like, wow, we've never done anything like this before, we're going to need to share ideas, right? You're just painting the picture of what we're all doing here together in a way that creates a perfect rationale for why you really believe, genuinely believe, other people's voices matter.
That is so helpful. Thank you very much. Okay, Rachel, the productivity roundtable has just wrapped up. How can improving psychosocial safety help make workplaces more productive?
Yeah, so when we can see work is designed in a way that's safe and healthy, obviously there's flow-on effects to productivity. People work more effectively, they're happier, they're less likely to leave the workplace. So we look at psychosocial hazards, having low job control, that's a big hazard. That really deteriorates a person's ability to carry out work as they choose. So giving people more control over their job, giving them the right level of demands, people are going to work to a much more productive state. We see that if work is designed in a way that doesn't control those hazards, there's risk of turnover, absenteeism and sick leave. There's presenteeism, which is when you are at work but you're less productive. So there's a lot of aspects there. There's also the issue of claims. You know, psychological health claims in Australia are still going up. They're extremely costly. So through implementing systems and ensuring that these hazards are managed well, which is now what we have to do under law, there's going to be a really positive flow-on effects to productivity. And I think that's what is a real push for at the moment, is to ensure we can really harness Australian workers in the best way we can, supporting them to be productive but happy, more healthy and safe.
And can you explain a bit about the legal framework for managing psychosocial safety for Australian workers?
Sure. So in Australia, we've always had the duty to to assess hazards and identify if there are risks or not to workers and control them. But that's always been there. But we had a big review done by Mari Boland into the legislation, as well as a lot of collective social action and research that really showed we needed more clarity in the legislation. So previously, it was very much implicitly in there, but there was such a focus on physical hazards and risks that the silence around psychosocial issues, it gave this impression they're not as serious. It led to a lot of confusion. So having now this clarity in the legislation has really created this huge swell of activity and interest in this issue, and it's really prompting organisations to take action. So all jurisdictions have adopted this new legal amendment, except for Victoria, but that's coming in end of the year. I believe that they are also adopting similar regulations.
What are the elements then that make up psychosocial safety system in an organisation?
A great deal of research shows that senior management valuing psychosocial safety is very important. So management values, and I think Amy mentioned that with kindness, you know, having those values instilled and actually caring about staff from the senior management level is so predictive of good outcomes or negative outcomes, depending, I guess, where they sit. So we really want to see leadership from the top invested in ensuring workplaces are psychosocially safe. You know, it's not just things like having a wellbeing program or an EAP. It's actually having a culture around ensuring that there's regular consultation and talking to staff about their experiences, really understanding what the hazards are, what the risks are, what they're going through. And, you know, if you talk to anyone about their job, you can immediately pick up if there's issues or not. So it's about talking and having open communication, really prioritising these issues and acting upon them swiftly. We don't want to see a survey being done, which happens so often, on these issues, but no action being taken. We want to see workers on the talking to managers, change happening, evaluation of that change happening. We're seeing a lot of that happen at the moment in Australia, which is really positive, but there's still a way to go.
So in terms of psychosocial hazards that can be present in workplaces, I know it's early days, but I'd love to get a sense of what you think the big ones are going to be. And, you know, you can mention the whole range because we're trying to learn these things, but I'd really love to know where the pinch points are.
I think the biggest one, or one of the biggest ones, is work pressure. So people being asked to do more and more with less. People are, you know, it's just, and I think with the rise in technology now, people working from home, it's those boundaries around work are difficult, and I guess the expectations of productivity and profits also come into play here. So work pressure is a really big issue. Bullying and harassment is still very prevalent. There's a whole range. There's exposure to traumatic events. You know, that comes in a lot of jobs, but that's one of those risks that you can't really always eliminate. So we need to have supports in place to buffer the effects of that. So some of these hazards we can never really remove fully from a job, but we need to do our best to prevent that and to put supports in place to mitigate their harm. Role ambiguity is a really big one. You know, people not being clear about their work, what their role is, and that feeds, I guess, into work pressure. If they're not sure what they're doing, they could be doing other people's work. So having clear roles in there. And another one that we're seeing a lot at the moment is that poor change management. So if there's restructuring, how that is managed is a big psychosocial hazard.
Rachel, you've just published a paper looking at Australia's regulations on psychosocial safety. In a nutshell, what have you found that we should know about?
We included three studies in the one paper where we could really position Australia globally here. And we saw, you know, because of Australia's adoption of the new regulations, we really increased in the world ranking, I guess, of where specific legislation lies. So we're up there now with, you know, countries like Norway and Sweden that have very specific regulations and are a bit more advanced. And when we looked at the effects of introducing the legislation in Australia, we found that there was a relationship between those jurisdictions that did implement the regulations with their working conditions, which is fantastic to see it's having an effect. The main effect it had was on management priority of these issues and management value. We still need to see more around communication around this topic. So it was really positive to see. In Victoria, we didn't see those increases. We also assess psychological distress as well. And unfortunately, that still, whilst went up a little bit, it wasn't significant. It did increase a little bit, but it shows that even with the laws coming in, it still might take time to kind of cause positive outcomes over time and more work needs to be done. So overall, really good outcome on work conditions, which still needs to trickle down to improving health, but it's a really great, great starting point and shows all that action and time and consultation with implementing these laws is having an effect.
Amy, your recent article about misconceptions around psychological safety mentions proposed legislation in one US state, Rhode Yes. Island. Do you want to tell us about that?
Sure. Well, to be fair, this was proposed legislation in Rhode Island to ensure psychologically safe workplaces. And now, given the conversation we've been having, I think it becomes clear that you can't mandate psychological safety any more than you can mandate trust or you know, mandate engagement. You have to put in place the conditions where psychological safety, trust, engagement can happen. So it's one thing to have very specific mandates about work pressure, about work hours, about bullying, absolutely, but you can't mandate an outcome.
Okay, Rachel, we received a voice memo from an HR manager in response to my LinkedIn post about psychosocial factors and also psychological safety, which kind of went crazy because everyone wanted to get in there to make sure that we understood that they were different. So this person did want to remain anonymous, so this is not their voice, but listen to this.
In terms of how you're identifying and managing psychosocial hazards in the workplace, I think organisations have got a really long way to go. Leaders are still sending emails on Sunday saying they need something by close of business Monday. To me, that is a really clear indication of tight deadlines and excessive workloads and pressure that leads to stress and burnout. We've got such a long way to go in this space, and the education is there, and there's been awareness sessions and things like that, and some safety teams have really tried hard to do hazard identifications. But there's still a huge, huge gap.
Rachel, we'll start with you.
I think what happens now is there's confusion around how to practically implement steps. And I think especially in workplaces, a lot of these requirements are being pushed onto HR people who are not in the work health safety area. And that's a big issue. There needs to be a real, consideration of where psychosocial hazard management lies. I think it should be considered a work health safety issue and treated just the same as physical hazard management. And these systems do need to mature.
Final comments, Amy, from what you want people to take away about psychological safety.
Psychological safety describes a learning environment. It's created team by team through leadership skill at all levels. It's a profoundly better place to work. It's also a predictor of performance, innovation, engagement, low burnout, worker retention, and so many other good things that we care about.
And Rachel, just final thoughts, please, on psychosocial safety.
Sure. So I think that the first step is to learn more about the hazards, go online, look at the materials that Safe Work Australia and other regulators have on there, become familiar. And I think just to echo the point, just this is an opportunity to improve workplaces. It's a positive opportunity to learn and see the benefits that come from managing risks to get work to a no harm state and then really having a great culture that promotes psychological and physical safety. So just to end on a positive, we're seeing a lot of great stuff happening in Australia and yeah. I think we've come a long way. Doesn't mean there's not a long way to go, but certainly there's a lot of organisations doing the right thing and seeing the benefits.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Lisa. Lovely to be with you.
And thank you, Rachel.
Thank you. So great to be here. Thank you very much.
Dr. Rachel Potter is a research lead specialising in psychosocial factors and workplace safety at the University of South Australia. Amy Edmondson is a professor of leadership and management at the Harvard Business School. And don't worry, we haven't forgotten about Try This. Look out for our bonus episode for Try This about managing psychosocial safety in the Australian context. It's going to be dropping into your This Working Life podcast feed on Wednesday. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Angie Grant on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast, share it with a friend or a colleague. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, work it with care and kindness.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.